The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 3, Text Number 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on December 26th, 2013, in Canberra, Australia.
Today we are blessed by Srila Prabhupada with the opportunity to dive even deeper into the sweet nectarian mellows of Srimad Bhagavatam. So today we're reading from Bhagavatam 4th Canto, Chapter 3, Talks Between Lord Shiva and Sati, Text Number 2.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yada
Abhishekta
Daksha
Tu
Ramana
Paramishtina
Prajapatinam Sarvesham
Adhipatye
Smaya
Abhavat
Yatabhishikto Dakshastu
Ramana Parameshtina
Prajapatinam Sarvesham
Adipatyesmayo bhavat.
Yada.
When.
Abhishekta.
Appointed.
Daksha. To.
But.
Brahmana. By Brahma.
Parameshtina.
The Supreme Teacher.
Prajapatinam.
Sarvesham. Adipatye.
As the chief.
Smaya.
Puffed up.
Abhavat.
He became.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Brahma appointed Daksha, the chief of all the Prajapatis, the progenitors of population, Daksha became very much puffed up. Purport. Although he was envious and was inimical toward Lord Shiva, Daksha was appointed the chief of all Prajapatis. This was the cause of his excessive pride. When a man becomes too proud of his material possessions, he can perform any disastrous act, and therefore Daksha acted out of false prestige. That is described in this chapter.
Vande Aham Shri Guru Shri Tathapata Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Samagana Raganitam Vitamitam Sajivam Siddhaitam Sivadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakam Vitamsh Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Vishnu Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinami Namaste Saraswati Devi Bhagavani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vashtipati Vishitani. So, he was given a big position, Daksha.
but that that position, having that position, made him very proud and pumped up. There's a saying, this connection, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So, having a big position may appear to be very attractive. And then hear about everybody wants to be. But in spiritual life, it's not so desirable to have a big position. Although one may accept it, if it's the Lord's service, but it's not necessary to have a big position. To be big in devotional service does not require a big position. That's the point. The more you become the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, the more you become subservient, you see. That is big in Krishna consciousness. I've seen God brothers who were very eager to have big positions. And they were very successful moving up the ISKCON ladder. Temple president, GBC, and then Bloop. I had a God brother, I saw him move up the ladder. He was very expert at corporate dealings. He moved up the ladder. I saw him go from temple president to GB. He was my temple president. And he's very eager for big position. And I saw how he went from temple president to GBC. Very cleverly, he was able to influence all the leaders. He was the right man to take up a responsible position, and they really needed him, etc., etc. But his whole motive was how to move up the ladder. And as soon as he got up there, he fell down. Because he was more eager than position than he was in Krishna consciousness. He got that position, and that motivated him for some time in devotional service to try to move up the ladder. But once he was up there, because he had no Krishna consciousness, he was totally unsatisfied. He left. So instead of being interested in position, we should be interested in cultivating Krishna consciousness. That's the point. That will satisfy us in any position. Whether you're a big leader or you're just a rank and file follower, doesn't really matter. The important thing is that you awaken your Dharma Krishna consciousness. Because whatever position we have here in the society of devotees is only temporary anyway. You see. What really counts is how much you awaken your love for Krishna. So when you leave your body, you will be qualified to enter the pastime of Krishna. Everybody has a position in Krishna's pastimes. Everyone, even the little calf. Krishna hugs the gopis, he also hugs the cat. So everyone has a position. You don't have to worry about position. Your position is already there. We already have a position. We just have to awaken the loving feelings within the heart of Krishna. That was that. Ahai tikiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. Unless your devotional service is free of any motives and it's going on 24/7, only then will you be satisfied. So that should be our focus. How can I simply become fully absorbed in pleasing Krishna, whatever my position is? Whether I'm the pot washer, whether I'm the big GDC guru, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter. Whatever position Krishna has arranged for me, just like Prabhupada wrote one letter, he said, actually, all a devotee needs is a little place to lie down at night, some prasadam, and service to do. All we need is devotional service, place to lie down, and some prasadam. We don't need anything else. Some big title, some big office, some big position. Unnecessary. So we can learn a very good lesson. Daksha is in a roundabout way our Siksha Guru here, you see. He's teaching us what not to do. Teaching us don't become proud of having a big position.
Another point is, there are many positions, responsible positions in our society, but if you're proud of that position, you become incompetent to properly do that service. What are you saying? Somebody becomes proud of a position, and they're more interested in the position than they are in being Krishna conscious or in facilitating the others' Krishna consciousness. So this whole thing of position becomes very, very dangerous. You see, I want this position, I have to keep this position. The mundane politicians are like that, very much opportunists about that. As soon as they get some opportunity, they grab the post and they keep it, and they don't want to give it up. This is not the Vedic system. It's like Bhishma did. You see, he's the son of the king. He'll become the king, actually. Shantanu Maharaj was his father. But his father, in the Vedic system, the king, he can have more than one wife. So, the king, he fell in love with the simple girl, the daughter of a fisherman. And of course, the king can marry anyone he likes, he's the king, but at the same time, the etiquette is there, the parents' permission. So, he approached the father, and the father said, no, I don't want my daughter's son to be some, you know, low position. I want him to be the king. So Bhishma Devas said, well, I will not accept the position. Okay. So don't worry, you can marry my father and I will not become king. I renounce having become king. The father said, still that is not alright. Why is that? Because you may not become king, but your son will become king. So Bhishma Devas said, alright, I will never marry, is that alright? So in this way, the father was convinced, and he gave the daughter to Shantanu Maharaj to marry. Yeah. But just see the mood of Bhishma there, you see. He's lined up to have the topmost position to be the king. Big, big position, but he's not innocent. He's more innocent in making his father happy than he is in having some position, you see. And therefore, Shantanu Maharaj was so pleased. He has given up his sense gratification to facilitate my sense gratification. He was so satisfied that, my dear son, I bless you that you will never die unless you want to die. You can choose your own time of dying, I bless you. So we see that in history, that's what happened. Even though Bhishma Devas was wounded with so many arrows through his body, he was not leaving his body. Only when he chose to leave his body, then he leaves. So he, even though he was lined up to be king, still he had no interest in position. So this we should be our modus operandi, our style of Krishna consciousness. Whatever position Lord gives me, that's all right. He must be a big, big leader, I'll take that position. He must be, just a rank and file follower, I'll take that position, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the position. In this way, you have the biggest position, you see. The one who is purely absorbed in serving Krishna without any material motive, they are in the highest position of all. That's called a Acharya, you see. When he sets the ideal example, yad-yarata-rishi shrestha-stattari-vetarojana siyat-pramanam-kuru-te-vokat-tad-anavartate. Whatever the great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets, by exemplary acts, all the world preserves. So if one becomes an ideal acharya, he or she then will actually be the leader of the whole world. And Prabhupada even confirms that point also in his purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a very powerful statement. It's actually astoundingly amazing statement that Prabhupada makes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that one who chants the holy name of the Lord without offense becomes Jagadguru. In other words, his influence, the whole universe will take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So that doesn't require any position. I have to be a general president, I have to be an initiating guru, I have to be a GVC, I have to be a sannyasi. No, there's no position at all required. Simply you have to purely chant the holy names of the Lord. And then from that position of complete submission to the will of the Lord, one becomes in the most powerful position for influencing the entire universe to take up Krishna consciousness. That's Prabhupada's point. So we have to take lessons from this and learn from this. That's what we should aspire for. How can I develop pure love of God? If we make that our motive, I have one desire only, and that is to become a pure devotee. And Krishna will give us whatever position is most suitable for us to achieve pure devotion. Whatever position is most suitable for us to achieve pure devotion, that Krishna will give us. We should simply focus on becoming the pure devotee of Krishna. Another point is, when you become puffed up because of material possession, you can do any disastrous act. False pride is completely blinds one. You can engage in the most heinous sinful activities. We see it every day in the material world. People engage in such ghastly, horrendously cruel activities, and they justify it. Somehow or other, they rationalize it and they justify it. It's all due to false pride. So false pride turns you into a demon, actually. You can do anything cruel, anything vicious, and think it's okay, because I have to achieve my goal. So therefore, we have to be very, very careful not to be carried away by this false pride. Very, very careful. Guard ourselves. It all begins by contemplating the material sense objects, lusting after them, you see. Becoming angry when we can't get our desires fulfilled. In this way, we have to be very, very vigilant that we're not absorbed in material sense objects. Our consciousness is not absorbed in material sense objects. We have to purify our senses by engaging them in Krishna consciousness. Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhagangrayam Indriyai Sevan Muke Hijivado Svayam Evas Padatyanaha. No one can understand properly the transcendental name, fame, form, past forms, pastimes, etc. of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his blunt, materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes surcharged, spiritually permeated, Krishnized, by engaging his senses in the service of the master of his senses, beginning with the tongue, can the transcendental name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly powerful, wealthy, famous, cognizant, living, Supreme Personality of Godhead become manifested to him. So this is the key to how to protect ourselves from being carried away by false pride. We simply have to absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Because when you have Krishna, you have everything. When you have Krishna, you're situated even beyond being Brahmaji, the chief demigod of the entire material world. It's a bigger position, you see. The biggest position is actually to possess Krishna. That is the topmost position. So here we are struggling now with our senses, our sensual desires,
the lust, the anger and greed, the madness, illusion and envy. That's our present position. It's embarrassing, but what can we do? It's the reality. We're still in the material platform. So we have to now make that transition from being self-centered to being Krishna-centered. See, now we're thinking we're the center. We say Krishna's the center, but still we feel that we're the center. We still act as if we're the center. We still think as if we're the center. So that's the lingering disease of ahankar, still the remnants of that disease still in our heart. So we have to make that transition now. We have to go through the stages given by Rupa Goswami. Shada, Sarasanga, Bhajana Kriya, Nartanaviti, Nishta, etc. In this way, become completely, absolutely free of this false egotism, this false desire to be the Lord, this false desire to be the center. If we diligently follow the wonderful program that Prabhupada has given us, to rise early in the morning, take our bath, decorate the body with tilak, observe Mangal Arati at home or in the temple, worship the sacred Tulsi tree, chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, study the Bhagavatam. In this way, if we have a regular daily program, it will fix our minds in Krishna consciousness. And then we can absorb ourselves throughout the day, whether we're out preaching, whether we're out working a job, or whatever we're doing, by having a very good morning program, you see. It fixes our consciousness for the entire day so that we can be working, every day we can be working on subduing this false egotistic tendency more and more and more until it's completely gone. As I explained last night, drops of water wear away the stone. So you have to keep that water dripping. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I asked my disciple the other day in the airport in South Africa, well, how much chanting are we supposed to do? He said, oh, 16 rounds, Guru Maharaj. I said, what do you mean? 16 rounds. Prabhupada said at least 16 rounds. You see, it's a big difference. Not that, well, 16 rounds, I got my chanting done, now I can space, my mind can space out the whole day. Now I can space out the rest of the day, I got my 16 rounds. Prabhupada even made fun of, sarcastically made fun of us one time. Srila Kirti Prabhu tells this story. Prabhupada finished chanting 16 rounds, he said, he went and slid the beads up, and he says, now I finished my 16 rounds, I can do any damn thing I want. He's making fun of us, actually, you see. It's not like that. Now I can do any damn thing I want. We think that. Well, I got my rounds done, and now I can space out because my rounds are done. But no, chanting 16 rounds is getting started. Now I just warmed up, you see. Now I have to keep, I've got my momentum built up now. 16 rounds are giving me the momentum. Now I got to keep the momentum going. Prabhupada wrote a letter to some boys in Japan. He said that you should chant Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day. He said, while you're taking bath, you can chant Hare Krishna. When you're walking down the street, when you're doing something with your hands, when you're riding in the bus. In this way, he was telling him to always chant. I came across this letter in the Vedabase when I was in Vrindavan. You know, Vrindavan kind of, you know, it's pretty inspiring in Vrindavan to chant Hare Krishna. So I was thinking, wow, maybe I should get into this. Maybe I should think about keep the mantra going as much as possible during the day. But then my mind said, Sankarshan Das, what are you doing? Don't you dare do that. This is my space out time now. You got your rounds done. Now it's, I get to space out the rest of the day. What, don't get carried away. Don't be a fanatic, Sankarshan Das. My mind was objecting, you see. But I was thinking, no, mind, you don't know what you're talking about. Prabhupada knows more than you. So I tried doing it, just to add some more mantras, you know, when you're taking, we have the bucket shower in Vrindavan, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And just, you know, we're walking down the street, why not throw in a few extra mantras? What's the harm? I'm not going to go hoarse from a few extra mantras. So it's actually very powerful. You just throw some extra mantras in. where you normally wouldn't chant because my rounds are done. I don't need to chant yet because I haven't started my rounds yet. Why not just throw some extra mantras in? What's the harm? When you're shaving, you can go Hare Krishna, Hare. Of course, brushing the teeth is a little tricky. But, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Why not throw some extra mantras in? Why not throw as many extra mantras into your day as possible? Why not? What's the harm? And the gain is a very great thing. Because you get the idea that actually this is, I should always be chanting Hare Krishna. And I should always be absorbed in Krishna, nothing else. So it's very powerful. As soon as this tendency for false egotism, false pride, you see, immediately is conquered if you think of Krishna. Because with Krishna, you're not the boss. With Krishna, you're just a humble servant. But actually, it's totally satisfying. Just if I can just be Krishna's servant for all of eternity, I don't need anything else. That's all. I just need to be Krishna's servant. So as soon as you actually reconnect with him by chanting his holy names with care and attention and love, then it's the most satisfying, wonderful thing. I mean, Krishna is so amazing if you start thinking about him, you know. He's so amazing. Anganni yasha sakalandriya vritti manti pashyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti yang shama shundaram chanyagunaspavupam govindam madipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself, not itself, because each limb is he himself. Each of the limbs possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. Wow, that's got to be really amazing. A person who can do with any one of his limbs, he's manifesting unlimited, he's seeing, maintaining, and manifesting infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. And he's full of the most dazzling splendor. And you can actually be with that person at every minute in his company. You can see him. Prabhupada says you can talk with him, you can dance with him, you can eat with him. Right now we're feeding him. But when you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, you can eat with Krishna, just like Arjuna would eat with Krishna. You can eat with Krishna on the advanced stage of realization, Prabhupada explains. So we should just really get into Krishna consciousness and forget all this other garbage. Position, power, fame, name, all these things. Just forget it. Just get into being Krishna conscious. And we become completely, totally satisfied. So I can ask if there's any questions. Yes, Prabhu.
We talk a lot about being attracted to different things like position, fame.
Yeah, yeah.
Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that attraction and repulsion
are
stumbling blocks on the path of civilization.
That's right.
Can you comment on
being
repulsed?
Well, if one says, I won't take any position. I refuse to accept any position. Is it like one could be very greedy to get a position, or no, I won't take a position. I refuse to take a position. That's also a defect, because maybe the spirit, maybe Prabhupada wants you to take a position to help his movement go forward. Maybe you're needed in a position. You see. So one should just be surrendered. If Prabhupada wants me to take this position, my authorities, my GBC, my spiritual master, he says they want me to take a position, then I have to be surrendered. So being against having a position can be also a form of false pride. Wanting the position or refusing the position, both can be symptoms of pride, you see. So the actual position we should have is one of subservience to the will of Krishna. It's manifested to our spiritual master, to Srila Prabhupada, through our authorities in ISKCON. We should be subservient to that. That's a good point you made, Prabhu. But you know, we don't want to be repulsed either. Maybe Krishna needs us to be in a position.
So how to recognize that?
How to recognize that?
Yeah, recognize that we are not against and we are fighting for it.
What?
The position.
How to recognize?
How to recognize that whether we are repulsed, doing repulsion against it, or we are fighting?
How to know if we're properly situated in our attitude? Oh, we can ask. If we're not sure, we can ask our peers or ask our superiors how they see us, because it's very difficult for us to be objective regarding our own selves. We have a tendency to be very subjective regarding ourselves and not very objective. So that's why we really need to have peers who can be honest with us and superiors who can be honest with us, who can help us to objectively analyze what is our actual position and situation. So we should learn to hear from others how they see us, how they perceive us. So in this way, we can get a more realistic view of actually where we're at spiritually. If we chant as much as possible during the day, while we are engaging in various activities, we may not always be able to be as focused as during japa. Yeah, that's okay. That someone asked me the same question today. Well, that would be offensive round, wouldn't it? Offensive chanting. You know, if you're driving down the street and you're chanting, you're singing a kirtan, wouldn't that be offensive? The same question was asked. The question is, no, your japa is focused completely. There should be no splayed or divided attention while you're chanting around. But during the day, you may be walking down the street. You have to watch your step, obviously, so you don't trip. But it's not that I'm not allowed to chant Hare Krishna when I'm walking down the street, you see. So the point is, it's not offensive to add extra chanting to your day. Otherwise, how could Prabhupada give that instruction to those boys? They chant while you're walking down the street. Chant while you're taking your bath. Is Prabhupada telling him to commit an offense by that instruction? No. Not offensive.
Maybe that is regarding the chanting of japa.
Now, japa? Japa is exclusive time. Japa is not for other times. If I chant my japa while I'm cooking the burfi, you know, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Japa is completely focused. There's no division. During my 16 rounds, it's intensely focused just on the holy name. Nowhere else. Japa is different. That's intensive chanting. Why Krishna likes to play the flute? Oh, Shyam has asked some nice questions. Thank you, Shyam. Because the flute it's so beautiful. And especially when Krishna plays it, it's just the most sweet, enlivening thing. Krishna really enjoys it. I mean, Krishna loves playing the flute. He relishes it like anything. And he also attracts the gopis by playing the flute. He likes the gopis. He likes to attract the gopis. And when he plays the flute, the gopis become even more attracted to him. So he has a lot of good reasons to play his flute. He enjoys it, and he attracts the gopis, and he attracts the cows also when he plays the flute. He attracts all living entities when he plays the flute. And Krishna loves attracting everyone. That's his position, to attract everyone. And he loves doing that. He loves being attractive and attracting us. And he does it especially by playing his flute. Why the sky is blue? The sky is blue to remind us of Krishna. And Krishna is blue. See, the sky is a manifestation of Krishna. And the sky is... Krishna has mercifully made the sky blue to help us remember Him. Any other questions?
Bhishma's decision, Bhishma Dev.
What about Bhishma Dev?
Yeah. His decision to not get married, was it a correct decision? From a devotional point of view.
What was from the devotional point of view?
Was Bhishma...
Bhishma Dev's decision to not to get married was from the spiritual point of view, was it a good one?
Spiritual point of view was?
According to the spiritual point of view, was Bhishma Dev's decision to make not get married, remain brahmachari, was it good or why?
Was it spiritually good?
Yeah, but was it a good decision?
Was it a good decision? Well, he was in the mood of serving his father. That's why he did it. He wanted to serve his father. That was more important. Pleasing his father was more important to him than having a position. So, you're wondering, is that a spiritually correct thing to do?
He could have focused on Krishna. He could have focused on serving Krishna rather than his father.
Oh, serving his father. But should he have asked, but does Krishna want me to do? Does Krishna want me to do this? Well, first of all, Grandfather Bhishma is one of the great Mahajanas. He's one of the 12 Mahajanas. So he's a pure devotee of Krishna. So actually, everything he's doing is for the pleasure of Krishna. So in his case, that was definitely a spiritually beneficial thing to do, because as a pure devotee, he's doing everything perfectly to please Krishna. And he knows what will please Krishna the most. So the principle is not actually to please one's father. The principle is to please Krishna. And because he's a Mahajana, he could know this will please Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Anyone wants to please Krishna, he has to become detached from all material things. So this was one of the detachments.
He was very detached, you see, from having any position. Simply wanted to serve. The father was also devotee. These were great transcendentalists, these kings. So he wanted to serve a devotee. Instead of serving himself, he wanted to serve the devotee. So this is actually very exemplary what he did for us as devotees to think, how I can please the devotees. It's a very, very important principle. How I can serve the Vaishnavas. Because Krishna says, unless you're the devotee of my devotee, you're not my devotee.
But it appears that the father was wanting this woman. He wanted to marry someone. And just to facilitate, he did this.
He was facilitating a material desire, it would appear, yeah. And Kshatriyas, in Vedic culture, the Kshatriyas, that was their position. That was part of, actually, if a woman, even any woman who wanted to have a child by a kshatriya, she could approach him and he would have to fulfill that desire. It's totally different from our culture now. A woman would approach and he would be obliged to do that. It's a duty. Not like a sense gratification thing. It was a duty, the kshatriya then. So, this was part of their dharma, just like now a householder is allowed to have a wife, he's allowed to have children, and that is all engaged in Krishna's service. In the Vedic culture, these kshatriyas, they could have more than one wife, and they engage that in Krishna's service. So as a material desire, actually Prabhupada said sense gratification, so it is in one sense material. But if one is acting according to authorized religious codes, even you're engaging in sense gratification according to religious codes, that's regulated sense gratification. See, Santanu Maharaj, it was not illicit desire for him to marry that girl. It was part of his allotted quota according to the Vedic system. Just like you're allowed to marry, are you married? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were allowed to marry a wife. He was allowed to have married many wives according to the cultural codes for his position in society. So yeah, it was a desire for sense gratification. But that can be utilized in Krishna's service. It's like you can marry and you can have Krishna conscious children. That's considered sense gratification. But when it's done according to the order of the spiritual master, according to religious scriptures, then that is, it can be accepted and engaged in Krishna's service, and you can be purified and make spiritual advancement by engaging that in Krishna's service. So the same thing with Shantanu Maharaj. And what was the son that came by that? Who was the son of Satyavati? What was her son's name?
Vyasa
was the one that came from...
Wasn't that Parashara?
Parashara?
Who was the son? What son did Satyavati have? You remember?
Satyavati had a son first with Parashara Muni.
Who?
Vyasadeva, Parashara Muni. With Parashara Muni she got a Vyasadeva.
Who did she have with Santana?
Vichitravirya.
So the from whom the... So these were all dynasties that produced great devotees. So it's a very transcendental thing. These are dynasties that produce great transcendentalists.
If the Kshatriya impregnated a woman that came to him and requested, and they didn't marry... Who would look after the woman who couldn't get married then, and the child?
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know the details, whether they became wives or not. I don't know. But certainly, one thing for sure, they were maintained.
Like, for example...
They weren't like just begging, become beggars in the street.
Wondering how the sister...
They were maintained, for sure.
Just like, for example... when Pandu was not able, they got wives and Vichitravirya died, and somebody had to, begat the children, so Vyasadeva came, and the two wives of Vichitravirya who left the body, they were very fearful of Vyasadeva, and one was like that, so they were Pandu and Dhritarashtra were born, and the third son was born by maidservant. So he was maintained.
But sometimes they're not maidservants that approach the Kshatriya,
The maidservants are still maintained.
Yeah, because they're maintained by the royal family, but sometimes it's not the maidservant. Any woman could approach
the interesting. It's an interesting thing to research in the scriptures. It'd be interesting to see. But certainly they were... I remember what was the name? That Arjuna wanted. She approached Arjuna. She was some naga. Yeah, she wanted, and Arjuna gave her a son. Now everybody was maintained. It's not like people wandering the streets, having to go to the welfare office. I'm an unwed mother. No, it wasn't like today. No, they were all very well. They were very, very nicely maintained. Everyone was very nicely maintained.
The past times of Yayati and Sarvista and...
Devayani.
Devayani and Sarvista. They were all maintained. Sarvista became, even though she was princess, she became the maidservant, and they were maintained by Yayati.
Yeah. So everybody in the Vedic culture, everybody was, got tender, loving care, whatever their position was. Everybody was cared for and maintained very nicely. Except for the Pandavas, they got booted out by a very irreligious thing that Duryodhana did, booting out the Pandavas. they went into exile. That's an exception. Therefore, Krishna had to rectify, you see, and bring the Pandavas back. They were being very grossly cheated by Duryodhana and company. Pandavas.
One may accept a position with good intention,
mm-hmm.
but then upon achieving that position, one finds that it's detrimental to one's spiritual life.
Yeah.
So should one try to continue in that position irregardless, or should one just say, okay,
yeah.
this is not for me?
One is seeing that it's detrimental, but one may be blaming the position for one's difficulty. That may be a mistake of his own vision. It could be that there's something wrong with his attitude, and that's the difficulty, not the position itself. That would be more likely. Because actually, if one is properly situated in Krishna consciousness, you can take any position. It doesn't matter. The most likely thing is, if he's thinking this position is messing up my Krishna consciousness, it means he's not, his consciousness is not properly situated. Because if you have the right consciousness, you can do anything for Krishna. You can be in any position. Actually, Prabhupada, there was an interesting example of this. One boy, one brahmachari, there's a nice brahmacharini there, so we think, well, I gotta get married. So he did that, he arranged it, he changed his position from brahmachari to grihastha, and he's thinking, what am I doing here? I'm stuck in household life, I should be a sannyasi now. I mean, shortly after getting married, he wrote Prabhupada for sannyasa, if you can imagine. Prabhupada was not very pleased. He said, actually, Your dissatisfaction is not from your position, it's your own lack of Krishna consciousness. So, we should, instead of thinking about the position, I'm in the wrong position, we should think, that's the first thing we should do. Of course, there are cases we should think about my own lack of Krishna consciousness, but then it's also stated, that example of Gajendra and the crocodile, the Bahivas, in the wrong position in the water because he was losing his strength in the water fighting with the crocodile. So one sannyasi had given up, he couldn't maintain sannyasasam, so he became happily married. So there is such a thing as sometimes having to change your position. There is such a thing. But first you should understand that ultimately the only thing that is required is Krishna consciousness. So one should always try to just be Krishna conscious and that way adjust to whatever position you're in. But if it's too much of a stretch, due to the conditioned nature, then one may have to change one's position. But always try for the ideal thing first. Let me try to keep this position that my authorities have given me to the best of my ability and beg Krishna's help. Because whimsically changing position, Prabhupada didn't like. We had a temple president in Dallas. Prabhupada said, temple president is a lifetime position. That was Prabhupada's instruction. So it's not that once you keep, you know, like dancing from this position to another, looking to become satisfied. I got to get out of this position, that position. Just whatever position, the ideal situation, whatever position you have, thank you, Krishna, for giving me this position. Now let me just be perfect in this situation I'm in now. Let me just be your pure devotee in this situation. That's the ideal thing.
Shyam is asking why
Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita? For your benefit, Shyam. Because you are an illusion. You think you're that body. You think you're the center of the universe, don't you? Yes. So, to dispel your illusion, Krishna placed Arjuna in a sort of maya, similar to your maya. Actually, Arjuna is a pure devotee, he's an eternal associate of Krishna, but Krishna placed him under the influence of maya, so that he would need to be enlightened and brought out of Maya, because actually you're in Maya. You're in Maya, Sham. So these words of the Bhagavad Gita are actually meant for you, to bring you out of Maya. So you should carefully study Bhagavad Gita regularly. Every day you read some, at least one verse from the Bhagavad Gita and the purport. Try to understand that, the meaning of it and how it applies to you. Can you do that every day? You agree to do it? Okay. Your mommy and daddy, make sure he reads it one every day now. Your mommy and daddy are going to make sure you read one Gita verse and purport every day. Yeah, very nice question. Okay, you had...
It's just that sometimes it appears that Krishna that doesn't want to give a position to somebody because we're weak, and he wants to keep that devotee humble, and because he knows that they'll get proud and fall down.
Yeah.
So it's Krishna's mercy. Yeah. And sometimes, like you were saying before, Krishna might not want somebody to get a position.
Yeah.
Because they have got that weakness and might get puffed up.
Yeah.
But they say, yes, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it. And Krishna says, all right, you'll have to learn by this time.
Yeah, that's also them. And they're so determined, they want that position, they want it, and they get it and they fall down. Yeah. It's better not to be too eager for a position. But just simply desire to serve Krishna in any position. That's the best position to be in. Anything else?
Does it apply, just following on, in materially, some of us have jobs, so does it apply materially? Should we be satisfied with our material position, Krishna is, and see this from Krishna? And
Well, in the material world, we encourage you to take whatever position will best facilitate your Krishna consciousness. So if you can see that having a different position would be better facility for my Krishna, for serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada, then it's certainly proper for you to aspire for a different position. The point is, how are you best facilitated to be Krishna conscious and serve the Krishna consciousness movement? You should take whatever position will best accomplish these two things. Sometimes getting a bigger position in the material world means less time for Krishna consciousness. It means more hours on the job. So it's sometimes a dilemma. Devotees say, well, I can take this position, I'll make more money, I can donate more to the temple, but I have less time to do service. So then you should consult with your temple president or your spiritual master or some peers or your spouse or somebody, you know, get some opinions. You know, is it better to make more money and have less time to serve Krishna, or make less money and have more time to serve Krishna? Because the money is also a valuable thing that helps our movement. So one should take advice from other Vaishnavas in specific situations. Because there's no hard and fast rule for exactly, you know, how to do it in each situation. And you have to judge each situation individually and see what will best facilitate my Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, your Krishna consciousness is the most important thing. The most important thing is how are you in the best position to awaken your love for Krishna. That's always the ultimate best way of looking at these decisions. But from another standpoint, it's very beneficial for our movement. We have devotees in high positions in the material world. Just imagine if all the leading positions in the world were devotees, the prime ministers, the members of parliament, the CEOs, all the college professors, and they're all Vaishnavas. Hey, that'd be great. So if one has a desire to, you know, get a PhD and be a professor, the head of a department at a university, we'll say go for it. Go for it. You know? Yeah.
For example, in London, when we were having that case about Bhaktivedanta Manor, they were closing it down, then the members of parliament, they had a good position, the Indians had good position, so they were fighting against the cause, and they...
Yeah. Yeah, when they tried to close down the manor, the local town or village, whatever they call it, wanted to close down Bhaktivedanta Manor. But there were members of parliament who were Indian members of parliament who were firmly, strongly fighting, even fasting in support of our Save the Manor campaign. And though having those big positions was very, very helpful. So we want to have people, we might like to have members and sympathizers of our movement in big positions throughout the whole society. That's how we can conquer the world. Just like when Buddha Dev attracted somebody in a big position to his philosophy, he attracted the king, Maharaj Ashok. He became attracted to Buddhism and with the help of the king, then Buddhism spread all over India, you see. So, we'd like you all to have big positions out there in the material world. But not to the sacrifice of your Krishna consciousness. At the same time. Anything else?
We see in the history of our movement that different people, different positions get equated with advancement in spiritual life. Like previously it was like book distributors, then it could be people who are in managerial positions. You know, we see that, you know, if you play harmonium and lead a good kirtan, that's considered, you know, like your spiritual advanced. So do we have to be careful about seeing external things as spiritual advancement?
I'm dealing with my deafness issue here now. Can you repeat that for me again?
Yes. The history of our movement, we see that sometimes external situations get equated with spiritual advancement. Like if you're a good book distributor.
Yeah. Someone may become a famous kirtan singer, a famous this or that, and that doesn't necessarily mean they're advanced. It doesn't necessarily mean they're advanced in Krishna consciousness. I remember in the old days, there was one devotee who became very, very... He sang really good kirtans. He was a hero, you know. Jai Satchinandana Prabhu was his name. He even did the translation for the Vaishnava songbook, the second translation. It was redone by him. Actually, the original by Achyutananda was better. He redid it, Jai Satchinandana. He became a big name. I remember we had a Rath Yatra in Atlanta. We flew him in, we flew him in to lead kirtans at the Rath Yatra. That was unheard of in those days. He was like a superstar. We paid a plane fare to fly him from L.A. to Atlanta to lead the kirtan. But he very, very shortly after that, he was gone. He was a big name. He had a style of singing that was pretty unique and pretty cool, but he wasn't very Krishna conscious, actually. So just because you're a big name, a big kirtan singer, big name kirtan singer, or you know your classes are considered really fantastic, or you have some, you know, whatever it may be, doesn't necessarily mean you're an advanced devotee. You can judge by who makes it back to Godhead, then you know who is really advanced. When you get back to Goloka Vrindavan, you can see whoever made it there. These were the advanced devotees, and when it actually made it back to Goloka. The ones that are still down there in the cycle, they're still working out some of their anarthas, you see. So one may have some karmic ability that makes them very successful as a musician, as a public speaker, as an administrator, etc. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're advanced in Krishna consciousness. Doesn't necessarily mean that. It's just their karma. And to be a good speaker, a good singer, a good salesman, a good manager, etc. So the real bottom line is how much their hearts become soft when they chant the name of Krishna. Does their heart melt when they say Krishna? Or is their heart still hard when they say Krishna? That's a real advancement. When one's heart melts by saying these two syllables, Krishna. I speak from a heart that doesn't melt when I say Krishna. Hankering for that day when it will melt. Is there anything else?
Why Krishna's book is called as Bhagavad Gita? Why it is called Bhagavad Gita?
Why is it called Bhagavad Gita? Gita means song, And Bhagavad means of God. So because Krishna spoke it, Shyam, and because it was actually sung, it's in the form of a song, therefore it's called the Song of God. Because God sung it, it's called the Song of God.
My question is that, why can Shyam speak himself?
So Shyam, she's saying that just as you can ask your mommy and daddy, you can directly ask me. Wow, that would be a big advancement for you to raise your hand and ask a question directly to the speaker of the class. Wow. I mean, Shyam is advancing now. I mean, a big boy. So you can try asking directly now. You can just raise your hand and you can ask me. That'll be very nice. I'll be very, very happy to see you doing that. Shyam is very much advancing now.
It's the fault of the father, because he is becoming mouthpiece for him. Instead of encouraging him to ask, he's becoming his mouthpiece.
He doesn't want any question to ask, actually. He has
to learn to become his own mouthpiece. Not that you're the mouthpiece. He has to learn to speak for himself. Otherwise, how can he ever be a preacher? He has to learn to speak for himself. Okay, anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you all very, very much for coming to Bhagavatam today. You are the stalwart hearers. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.